Hey everybody, Zach Valenti here. We recorded this episode a couple of weeks ago, but in light of the terrible events that just happened in Sri Lanka, we want to warn you all up front there's discussions about religious persecution and violence in this episode. So if that's a sensitive subject for you at the moment, definitely take care of yourself first and maybe skip the game this week. If you do want to skip the game, you can jump in around 37 minutes and you'll be good to go for the second half. This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas we can find from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
We are your hosts here at the No Bad Ideas HQ. My name is Gabriel Urbina.
My name is Sarah Shackett.
And I'm Zach Valenti. And today, I have a terrible idea for both of you.
You sound so chipper about it.
Yeah. It's an exciting one.
Oh, boy.
But before we get to that, welcome back, Sarah.
Oh, thanks.
How was your time abroad?
It was good.
Lovely.
People say hi.
Aw. Well, it's great to have you back with us here in the studio. Without further ado,
yeah,
I give you...
Hit us. What do you got, Valenti?
From the BBC News Service.
Lovely.
All right.
Hong Zhu Quan, and I'm sorry if I fuck up that name, the rebel who thought he was Jesus' brother. So this is...
James is Jesus' brother.
Wait. What?
Yep, wait for it.
Okay.
So Chinese history,
I don't know if I want to,
can be read as a series of peasant rebellions, one in the 19th century led by a man who thought he was Christ's brother, lasted 15 years and caused at least 10 million deaths.
Wait, this is the Boxer Rebellion?
Good question. I'm not sure if that is the name, but it very well might be.
That might be 20th century. But anyway.
It taught the communists lessons a century later and is one reason why China's leaders keep a close eye on rural unrest today.
Mm.
Yeah. The founding congress of the Chinese Communist Party at a Shanghai girls' boarding school in 1921 is commemorated in wax, waxwork figures around a dining table, some seated, some standing. Mao himself is speaking, his eyes gazing off into the distance in kind of a visionary way. Some are drinking tea, some are smoking, some have fans in their hands. At the time, they can hardly have imagined that they were men of destiny. They had to present themselves as a student group on vacation and run away when the police came. But these rebels ended up running China. They do not need to dwell on the miraculous good luck which brought them to power in 1949. The truth is that for every Chinese rebellion which succeeds, there are scores which fail, like the Taiping Rebellion, led by a man influenced by Christian missionaries who declared a heavenly kingdom on the Yangtze. I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but originally all Hong Zhu Quan wanted was to be a part of the establishment. A village school teacher, he immersed himself in Confucian scholarship for the civil service exam, but he just kept failing. Quote, he fell into what I suppose was some kind of depressive fit, and he had a vision, says Jonathan Fenby, who has written A History of Modern China. He'd imagined he'd gone up to the skies, and there he had met a very tall man with a long beard and thick belt who told him he had come back to Earth and eradicate the demons there.
Cool.
Wow. Uh-huh. Cool. Sometime later, he was given a Chinese translation of the New Testament by a Christian missionary. He decided on reading that the man he had seen up in the sky was the Christian God, and that he, Hong, was the brother of Jesus, and that the devils he had to exterminate on earth were the Qing dynasty, which then was ruling China and, of course, was not Chinese.
Sure.
So the Qing emperors were Manchus from Manchuria in the northeast, so they were not ethnically Han Chinese. They had conquered China in the 17th century, but their glory days were over by the mid-19th century, and they were losing to the British in the Opium Wars. So the Europeans brought Christianity, which for Hong was a convenient alternative to the Confucian Creed, which had rejected him. Quote, seeing that everyone in high heavens was...
I know that feel.
Seeing that everyone in high heavens scolded him, Confucius escaped down to earth with the leader of the demons, goes an account of Hong's vision, set down in writing by a follower. The Heavenly Father then sent the angels to chase after Confucius, tie him up, bring him back to the Heavenly Father, who was exceedingly angry, and instructed the angels to whip him. There was plenty of whipping, and Confucius asked for mercy repeatedly.
Okay.
Cool stuff.
So this basically goes on to, I'm not going to read the whole article.
Sure, it's
very long. But it's worth reading if you have any interest
in
this.
We'll have a link in the description for the episode.
Exactly. So long story short, this gentleman led a very like bloody populist revolution.
Yeah.
As Jesus's brother
in
China.
All right.
So I'm going to start a clock.
All right. Start the timer. But I would definitely love to do kind of a like
summary of
what were the salient bullet points here, and what era this was? 19th century?
Yeah, you said like 1860s is when it ended, right?
Yes.
Cool.
Okay.
So dude gets very depressed
because Confucianism rejected him,
and I guess like was he like a going for the civil service thing?
Yeah, it sounds like he was basically trying to be a part of the
right,
of
which
society.
Which involves like a lot of Confucian learning and training and testing. Is my so limited understanding of Chinese history? Oh my goodness!
I think my even more limited understanding would say yes. I think that's
cool.
Right.
So guy fails. Basically, to break into the Chinese civil service, is despondent and rejects Confucianism. Gets very sad and depressed. Orders lots of seamless. has a vision, as one often does after ordering lots of seamless, of meeting a bearded, tall man
with a thick belt.
With a thick belt.
Yep, thick belt is important.
Who does just like, do they meet? I forget like what, who instructs him to purge the world of demons.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. That's the important part. And then cut to an indeterminate amount of time later, he reads the Bible provided helpfully by Western missionaries.
And all of a sudden it's like, oh my God,
it's
like
clear.
My vision,
oh my God,
it all fits together.
Right.
Right. And so he decides to create a like Christian kingdom, in the Yangtze Valley and purge it of all like Confucian influence, and battle the not ethnically Han Chinese, Qin Dynasty, or I forget which dynasty it was.
Yeah, I can get
but
a fact check on that.
It's the Manchus, right?
Yes.
Okay. And starts a decade plus incredibly bloody civil war.
Okay. So I like the thing that I gravitate towards here.
I had
is
a specific thing that I gravitated towards, but go ahead.
No, it's sort of just like the central grain of man finds himself kind of rejected in his hopes and ambitions and dreams in one
crushed.
Religion dashed,
yes.
And kind of, you know, turns around and becomes a near messianic figure for another religion. And I would kind of want to hold on to that and partly due to respect for the real people that were involved in this very bloody struggle and that sort of like really did believe in this gentleman and what he stood for. And also I think partly out of our kind
ignorance
of combined non-mastery over the nuances of Chinese history. And I want to sort of make sure that we don't end up telling a story that kind of tramples in another person's house.
Yeah.
taking that central grain of an idea and transplanting it into something else.
Yeah, I was going to run away even further because what tickled me was there was the description you gave about like the vision that this guy had about Confucius escaping from heaven and having to be brought back and punished with lots of whips. And like the idea of staging an escape from heaven is interesting to
me. That is cool.
So I would be down for either like transposing the realization that you are a key figure in a religion that was not your original religion to somewhere else, maybe somewhere fictional or, you know, Greek myth or something that we have a little bit more footing on, or, you know, heaven escape. Great Escape is the name of the movie I was reaching for.
Right. That could be fun to kind of do as a like almost The Prisoner-esque style. Like, right. You know, somebody dies, they end up sort of in this like beautiful, perfect village where everything is wonderful and everything is amazing. Until you try to leave. And at that point, all of a sudden, like, you
know, the bouncy ball.
Or, you know, whether it's the bouncy ball or it's the angels, or it's just kind of like physically impossible. Like you get to the edge of town
and then you're back in the center of town. And
you walk and suddenly the next step, you're like back in the town square. And
it's right. You're waking up in your bed or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Same infuriatingly polite music playing.
Oh, sure.
right. Which of course begs the question
of like why you would want to leave.
Right.
Yeah.
Infuriatingly polite music.
Right. Like I think that there's a couple of possibilities. And one is sort of like that classic, like, you know,
Stepford thing
that
people Wives are like, vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And also sort of like, I would rather be an individual in hell where I can listen to, you know, Hendrix, my Metallica and my Hendrix and my Meatloaf records.
As I suffer. Yeah.
Right. Then kind of, you know, be up here. With like the only music being like
all along the watchtower or nothing.
Right. And I'm here, like, you know, like to steal a bit from Good Omens, it's like only two good musicians have ended up here in the last 400 years. And like, you know, and like I don't want to listen to like, you know, Handel and
oh God, what was the other one?
Yeah, it wasn't Vivaldi. I don't remember. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I think that that's one option of just kind of like being here is surrendering my individuality, and I would rather kind of surrender my sort of physical comfort.
Yeah.
Or metaphysical, I suppose.
I suppose, yeah.
Over that.
Like endless bliss is boring kind of a thing.
The other possibility is something along the lines of I have
things that I
I have unfinished undone. Business.
Yeah.
You know, like I still need to tell Marta that I love her. I still need to tell.
I still need to pull off that heist.
Right. And like, it was one of those things where it's like, you know, that could even be a funny scene where it's like the accounting department is kind of looking at this guy and now I'm like, just kind of like stealing a little bit the lexicon from The Good Place.
Yes.
And that's okay. Where like the accounting department is kind of looking at him and being like, wow, you hadn't done a single bad thing in your entire life before that, like, you know, like freak accident with that like rolling fridge that crushed you to death. And he's like, no,
but I was planning
this huge heist from like, you know, like the UNICEF like vault. And they're like, but you didn't do it. Like, you know,
again, stealing from The Good Place of the woman who ends up in the medium place of just like, you were a horrible person, but
right.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen The Good Place, watch The Good Place.
It's a very good show.
And I think that like the other sort of possibility is that it gets to kind of like, I guess something like a Get Out-y place.
Oh, sure.
Of kind of like the person that gets to heaven kind of all of a sudden is like, heaven has like an agenda and it's not like, it's not a good one. Like they're planning something and
I don't know how I fit into this.
Right.
Or if, you know, I'm going to be taken advantage of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
where I need to warn
people. Right.
Right.
Yeah. No, the you don't want to see where the souls actually go.
Right. Right. Soylent Green is people's souls.
So yeah, we have several options we could go down for that that fork in the road. I would be curious to talk through briefly realizing that you're an important part of a religion, or just becoming a messianic figure in a religion, and sure. Figure out if there might be anything there, because that's you know, lots of room for either comedy or drama.
See, and like if we were gonna go down that road, I would want to go it to like almost like like an American Psycho satire place.
Oh, cool, cool, cool.
Where it's like,
would it be more like sort of resentful of not being accepted?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh yeah,
it's
oh,
not
yeah.
like I'm an important figure in this other religion. It's like, fuck you, I can't be part right. of your club. I exactly. make my own club.
Exactly. Like, you know, like you know, like you go and you try to become like a Protestant priest,
mm-hmm.
and they like turn you down. 20 years later, you're gonna be fucking Pope. And then they're going to see who can't be a priest.
Oh, man.
Like, you know, like you're going to like turn around and you're going to like ruthlessly climb your way up the ladder of sort of like their major rival. And then they're going to be sorry that they didn't let you be like, you know, the priest of their tiny little parish.
Man. What a like... better version of the young Pope that is.
Oh, yo, have you seen those pictures of Jude Law and those in that beach? Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
I'm well aware.
Meatball.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, but yeah, so sort of kind of something that is like somebody like so ruthlessly climbing up right. the ladder for so the wrong reason, and especially
and
kind
it's
of a ladder
such for a, of a sanctified thing right. that like deals with such vulnerability in our like quest for meaning and
right.
yeah, understanding and all of that,
and having to kind of like engineer miracles so that he gets
sure.
like canonized as a saint in their lifetime. And it would be sort of this like very like Richard III figure where he would like go out and he would be like blessing people and people would feel so touched and he would just be this like fountain of love and joy and warmth. And then the door closes and he's alone and instantly like the mask drops.
Right.
Right.
And the light leaves the eyes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Man. And this is one of those like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, however many years ago, I would really be sort of like talking about like it would be going to like a real Frank Underwood place. Now it's not so cool to use that as a frame of reference.
But it is a good frame of reference of just
right.
like because
of
really
dastardly shit.
Like
yeah.
it's the pettiest of insults that sets him on that path.
Yeah, actually though.
Like it's really not that big a deal.
And it would even be interesting.
Such a disproportionate reaction.
Right. I know. Just like, I don't get a secretary position. I'm going to become the president now by destroying yeah. lives.
I'm God's brother, by the way.
Nobody tells me what I can't do,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Don't tell me what I can't do. Oh, he can be played by Terry O'Quinn, yeah.
Yeah, Terry O'Quinn needs a good role.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's been a while since Lost.
And it could even be, like, funny if, like... we don't immediately have access to like the character's backstory.
Oh, sure.
And so we kind of know that like they're like doing all this shit to become Pope for like some ulterior motive.
Right.
And then finally it comes out that it's like this one time I tried to become a Protestant priest and they said I wasn't good enough. I'll show them good
wait,
enough.
Wait. So exterior, giant mansion.
Uh-huh.
Closing in, we go through the windows.
Sure.
On the giant, ridiculous deathbed lies a wealthy man.
Uh-huh.
Right.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I see where this is going.
In his hand clasp is some object of
yes.
religious significance.
Uh-huh.
And
perhaps
word is
one made
uttered.
Out of glass.
Yes. Yeah, so that when it rolls out of his lifeless hand, it can shatter.
right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then we have to work backwards to understand.
I see. Perhaps through the eyes of a reporter.
Yes. You're onto something now.
Who goes and talks to people that were important in this old man's life.
But what should we call it?
Cardinal...
Kane. I like the
alliteration
of that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good.
For those whose brains have not been rotted by too many movies, Citizen Kane was the reference.
Yes.
Yes, we are now doing a remake of Citizen Kane, except it's in the world of the Catholic hierarchy instead of in the world of newspaper business, which I'm actually here for.
Not a huge stretch.
I'm not opposed to.
No, and you know what's the best part? This is absolutely the person that would, like, when they die, end up in heaven, and the person would be like, "Hi, welcome, you're in heaven." He would be like, "Nope, I'm out of here."
So we got unfinished business.
So we got the first movie and the sequel.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no, and he needs to get back down to earth because he dies before he can become Pope. Like,
that's
you
right,
know,
he's a cardinal.
Yeah, he's a cardinal, yeah, but he hasn't been
Pope
yet.
So he needs to bend reality so that he can get.
Y'all have 15 minutes left. I'm glad that we've cracked the sequel.
And then we're going to call it Get Poped.
So you think you can pope?
Cardinal King. So you think you can pope?
I think like that we're just going to spend the next 15 minutes workshopping
I'm kind of curious how 3D comes into the sequel.
Because no, don't even worry about it. So many fancy hats.
Oh my god, I'm crying. Oh Jesus. No. Okay, well, I'm glad that we feel so self-satisfied. No,
glad
you know what?
We solved it.
It's always, like you were saying, Zach, though, it's always such a good sign when you're like, well, I don't know what's happening in the first installment,
but I know the sequel.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when you should feel good about what you're doing. You're definitely putting your horse in front of your cart.
Yeah.
Okay.
The road is elsewhere, though.
All right, but like,
but we should pick and then go do.
Let's talk about Cardinal Kane. We don't need to pick it, but I'd like to figure it out a little bit more.
Sure.
Yeah. What is the scale of this thing? Is it a 2-hour movie? Is it like TV show? Is it like an Angels in America style, like 2-night, 7-hour theater extravaganza?
Sure. And I'm trying to get my head out of Young Pope territory.
Mm-hmm.
So like maybe television miniseries isn't quite right, but I also feel like movie isn't quite right either.
I was going to say this feels like, I'm such a brain farter these days, but so there was a French remake with Gerard Depardieu
of Count of Monte Cristo,
yes, like that. Mm.
Yeah. And it was like a 2-night event.
It was 10 hours.
It was like a
ridiculous
thing?
Amount of content, but it was in like a ridiculously short number of episodes.
Right.
Like and each episode was 3 hours.
Something
yeah,
like that.
And it's
like two.
And it is like if you want like the like fullest adaptation of Count of Monte Cristo.
No, they like. Put the manuscript on the table and everybody's like, where's the script? He's like,
it's
where
right
we're going,
here.
We don't need scripts.
But yeah, your movie, I think, looks very, very different from...
Right.
Like, if it becomes a more straightforward story if we have, like, 10 hours to tell it.
Yeah.
Versus if we just have two.
No, because, like, if we just have two... Then I think we're looking at like kind of much more of a like Death of Stalin-esque kind of like
power,
compressed period where like, you know, it would probably be
like the
whoever is currently Pope passes away.
No. And the like we start with the doors slamming and the lock being locked. And finally we get the Armando Iannucci version of like the delightfully Byzantine Pope election that we've all been dreaming of.
And actually, like, I would watch that version of 12 Angry Men where it's just like, you're just locked in the room with all the cardinals and it's watching this guy like slowly manipulate like everyone into picking him.
Right.
And kind of like, you know, like the chess games.
Right. Because like the actual rules for like the ballot process is so convoluted that it takes weeks, so you have enough time to sort of develop factions, play them against each other, raise up a candidate that you're going to be kingmaker for, and then like dash that person's right. hopes, and suddenly you're there as like the sensible alternative.
Right, and like, you know, it's the compromise that makes everyone unhappy, yeah, but like, you know,
everyone's still
you know?
A little bit happy.
Right. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, no, I'd totally watch that.
And like, you know, there's a version of it that is like the Armando Iannucci version of it that is kind of like bigger than life and like, you know, and it's all super exaggerated and kind of like very.
No,
like,
but then there's like the triad election version of it where it's deadly serious.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like deadly serious.
And I think that if it's deadly serious, then this guy needs another motivation other than he.
Petty.
Yeah. Other than sort of like the wildest. Like,
I'll show you, you know, Father Grafton or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
I was trying to think of a particularly English name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of like whoever that first person that told him that he couldn't be a priest was. Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Because we were making fun of Frank Underwood earlier as like spite is sort of a silly motivation.
Yeah.
And also like if it is a movie, sort of naked power feels like not something we could unpack in that amount of time.
No.
Just like...
A little less than 10 minutes.
Okay. I mean, it could be like a particular enemy that's out to get this guy. And like the only way for him to escape the Long Knives is to become the Pope and to become like, you know, the highest authority is how he gets out of trouble.
Sure.
Kind of a thing. There's also sort of a more philosophical of like, I want to take the church in a different direction kind of a thing.
That's sort of where my brain was going.
Sure.
Sort of like, you know, this is someone who early in life had some like very terrible experience that like convinced them that like the Catholic Church as an institution just like needs to
is fatally
go
flawed.
Away.
Yeah.
And you know, and like you can't, so many people have tried to take that ship out from outside. And it's like, no, like the only way to really take it up is to become like the person that is like in charge of the helm and then steer it straight into the iceberg.
Right.
Yeah. Like that is kind of like what would occur to me if it was like, if we're doing the like serious gritty version of this and then it can even sort of be like something where like he can kind of be like there can be sort of like a big speech that he gives to someone that like figures out that like he's trying to like do this power play, and he can sort of like do sort of like a big like villain monologue speech that is sort of like, you know, like, do you have any idea of like, you know, like how much, you know, how many people the Catholic Church has turned against each other? Do you have any idea how many, you know, like
lives
atrocities have been committed?
Yeah.
How many lies? How much money stolen? How many crimes covered up? How many improprieties? Do you have any idea how many souls have been damned to the blackest corner of hell in the name of uplifting this, you know, horrible, flawed bureaucracy?
Yeah, this marbled corpse.
So much for not stepping on cultures.
But this is my culture. This is my culture. Cool, like, you know, cool, like cool, I identify as Catholic, and I also like don't believe like this. This is sort of like what this person would be saying. I don't think that there's anyone that, I would say that if you think that the Catholic Church is completely above reproach in any way whatsoever, I wish you well.
There's some good news stories
the end
that
of
came
our
out
dialogue.
Recently
yeah.
that are useful.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I, as a raised Jewish but father's Catholic, I've heard some stories.
Oh, yeah. No, there are stories.
There certainly are.
And the history of the Catholic Church is a history of mass warfare and mass, you know...
Mass a lot of things. Which, you know, it really... This is an aside, so I'm going to keep it brief. But it really is interesting how the rubber meets the road when a religion becomes a state actor.
Right. And this is by no means kind of a condemnation of anyone that identifies as Catholic or anyone of any faith in any way.
Yes.
I think that we are just kind of criticizing the historical role of the church and saying that it might be interesting to have a character within it that is actually one of the people that feels that it is without redeeming factors.
Yes.
Finn.
Well said. 6 minutes.
Okay. Well, I mean, we're doing this now, so...
Great.
Yeah.
You sure we don't want to go back to the other idea? Yeah,
the other idea.
Just like U-turn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this heist...
Right.
So I like the idea of our protagonist, who is going to be... I think morally dubious at best.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Is goal is to sabotage the institution of the Catholic Church and bring it down by being vested with the absolute authority.
Right.
And not only like that being Pope grants, but like by absolutely like annihilating the like Vatican bureaucracy.
Right.
That in a lot of ways keeps things running.
Maybe even sort of like I'm going to crack open the archives and sort of like, you know, everything that has been kept hidden
will be revealed.
Right.
And I guess sort of the thing that we need to figure out is whether this is a sharp reveal towards the end of the film, or whether we as the audience sort of know going in that the person who is delightfully and artfully manipulating cardinals has bad faith, shall we say.
Yeah, I think that it depends. If we are following this person that is trying to kind of Emperor Palpatine his right. way into being Pope. I think that we probably need to know what's up
from
pretty
the
early on. Yeah.
And maybe not like the extent of the strength of the feelings, but
yeah.
just that like...
No, and we don't need to know sort of like why he feels this
yeah.
way. Like we don't need to know kind of like what,
like
all the depths of it. We don't need to know all the details or the history, but I think we kind of need to know I am so close to you know, completing my grand design.
Right.
That will let me destroy this institution.
Right. I think you could open with an interesting dream sequence, sort of like, you know, like, and this has been my plan all along.
Right.
Like, wakes up, like, you know, oh, holy father that I was just stabbing in the back. Like,
I bless you.
Very, and nice.
Yeah. And no, and it's that Richard III thing of like, this person is so heinous
right.
that how do you get the audience to identify with them? You have to kind of bring them into his confidence.
Sure.
Like you have to kind of like have like the audience be in on a secret that they have, because otherwise...
Yeah, they have no reason to invest in this person.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, if we want it to be a surprise, then I think we need to be following a different person. You
right.
know, then I think it needs to be like...
They're young lieutenants.
I'm going to mess this up, but like, is it the Camerlengo that
Whoa,
is
I'm not going to be able to fact check you on
that. I believe that's correct, but only because I've seen Angels and Demons.
Oh, there you go.
Nice.
And Ewan McGregor plays that guy.
Right, and they're sort of someone that is like the...
No, they're basically like the majordomo of the Vatican.
And they are involved in sort of the election
yes.
proceedings and kind of involved in the running of it.
I
could
no,
be wrong. I'm wrong?
says the Jew. Cardinals are the only people allowed in...
Oh, okay.
And there is someone who becomes... there is a cardinal that becomes like the guy who runs the election. The Camerlengo locks the doors and is basically responsible
for
like the running of the Vatican while all of the cardinals are inside.
I see. Okay. In that case, then like if we want it to be a surprise, then I think the protagonist needs to be the cardinal
yeah.
that becomes
the the president of the, I forget the term,
yeah.
but like the president of the proceedings.
Right. The sort of person that is in charge of like the election needs to go well and needs to be sort of
like
smooth, a clean, fair election.
Yeah, we know that it's probably going to take like 10 days. That's okay.
Yeah.
But it needs to run smoothly.
And we know that it's probably going to be either like, you know, Cardinal Mancini or Cardinal Umberto.
Right.
But then Cardinal Palpatine, you know, comes in from the rear.
Yeah. And I guess we should figure out how like what the stakes of this are and how off the rails it can go, whether like a cardinal shows up, is like dead at some point.
Right.
Cardinal Umberto just like doesn't get up to go to the election at a key moment in the mm-hmm. vote or something. Or whether, you know, it's just more like trades of wordplay.
Right. And like this actually brings up interesting questions of like, you know, how do you sort of threaten people that are in the positions of cardinals?
Right.
Because, you know, if this is a political office, then it's like most of these people have spouses, they have families, they have material possessions.
And also term limits.
Term limits, yeah. Elections that they need to kind of meet again.
Right.
Once you're a cardinal, you're kind of a cardinal.
You're kind of a cardinal. Yeah.
And you also are like very confident in the existence of an afterlife, have vows of non-possession, have vows of
chastity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
5, 4.
That snuck up.
Well,
poison.
The answer
with the Vatican is always poison.
Cracked it. Boom.
I also think we get a title for this episode. The answer is always poison.
You're welcome.
You know, you like that more than so you think you can pope?
So you think you can pope?
We'll okay, sort that's a little out better. Later.
Yeah, we'll make an executive call. Until then, we'll be back after these messages.
Okay, y'all, breaking in for just a second to give you a little heads up on some other stuff that aren't No Bad Ideas that we are up to. The main one of which for the past few months has been creating an honest-to-goodness audio drama course that you can take if you are at all interested in learning how to write stories that work on the radio, or storytelling in general, or thoughts on creativity, which one assumes you might be interested in if you are listening to this podcast. So if that is something that sounds like a cool way to spend some time, head over to audiofiction101.com. Again, that's audiofiction101.com to check out all the details about the course, what it covers, what scholarship options are available, and all sorts of fun things. We will now get back to the other fun thing, which is the back half of the show. See you there.
And welcome back, everybody, to the second half of the show, where we break it down a little bit. It's a much more informal talk about creativity and how to keep it more or less sustainable.
And creative, as they say.
Yeah.
That's optional, I think.
Yeah.
And this week, we thought we would talk about something timely in our own lives, the idea of taking time off?
Question mark?
Yeah. What is this time off that you speak of?
Hence
time
the
of,
question
time,
mark.
Time of what?
Yes.
What do you do?
That's a
in
good
the, in the time
question.
That's off.
I feel like I would reflect that question right back to you, world traveler.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You would only know this if you have made the mistake of following me on Twitter. But I went to London on a vacation because it was like the first. I had a moment last September where two very rare things happened. One, I realized I had a little bit of extra money to play with. Two, I realized that I hadn't taken a vacation in 2 years and was like, well, I have a problem and I can fix it. So I for my birthday this year, I decided to go across the pond and luckily had some wonderful couches I could stay on and people I could hang out with and things I could do. And it was great. And I only felt like I was wasting the time and not being productive, I would say, like 18 to 20% of the time that I was there.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was a good...
That's a really good ratio.
It is a really good ratio, though, right?
Surprisingly.
Because like the last couple, you know, sort of bigger trips that I have gone, they have been quote unquote working vacations. And I have, you know, had my laptop out in beautiful places, just like manically typing away mm-hmm. and not being able to enjoy it as much. So I made like more of a conscious
time choice away from all that
to take a little bit time off and not. I am, of course, paying for it now by spending all of this weekend working. But like,
yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, what are you going to do? I guess I've always sort of I was the kid who showed up orientation week at college at the study abroad office and been like, hi, you don't know me yet, but I'm going to be very annoying to you very soon because I would like to go somewhere. And travel both like within the States and internationally is something that I enjoy a lot and haven't been able to do as much as I would like. And so it feels less like time off than it feels like tending to a part of myself that I often neglect.
Mm. Interesting.
What about y'all?
Well, I love that idea of it's not time off, it's time on something else. I feel like I've been notoriously bad at not taking vacations.
Yeah.
And I definitely pushed the envelope in the last 3 months with the online course that we made on top of the other online course I was working on top of this podcast and the other podcast I was working on, other freelance work. And mm-hmm. I definitely reached a scary place in terms of sleep deprivation and feeling not like totally myself. Mm-hmm. And so I just took some time off, not quite a vacation, but just a bit of conscious downtime.
Yeah, like that was sort of what I was curious about. Like, what do you mean when you say sort of like took some time off? That's like you went a week without doing any work.
Oh, I wish.
Did you go a full day without doing any work?
Is yes.
It like, good.
Doing work, like but different like with kinds like stronger of work? Boundaries.
Or? I think it was like setting up a few days where there was just nothing I had to do. No deadlines, sort of like turning off the phone. Just like setting myself up to just wake up and kind of like do whatever felt like I wanted to do and to not make myself wrong when it felt like doing nothing.
Right.
And so I think that is what I would call taking time off.
All right.
Sort of like being unreachable more or less and not having any expectations of producing work.
Excellent.
And the thing that I think I didn't appreciate until this year really was just how the cost of being always on. And I don't know if this is unique to my experience working freelance and sort of self-employed, mm-hmm. Or being vaguely, you know, related to what one might call the gig economy. There's a sense that like you're just always on because there's not set hours, there's not paid time off, there's right. not like as much of a sense of a safety net or structures external to oneself. And you know, if you have, depending on the agreements you have with clients, like people kind of can expect that things will happen last minute. And I'm seeing how I've like been complicit in like letting myself work that way and mm-hmm. and just how important boundaries are.
Sure. Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like, especially when I was working on Wolf 359, there was a real sense of kind of like, ooh, going to the movies. Your phone's going to be off for 2 hours and 15 minutes. How brave, you know, who knows what could happen in 2 hours and 15 minutes? Who knows what emails you could get in 2 hours and 15 minutes that require immediate fucking attention? Taking like 2 hours away from like communication means on a Saturday afternoon, ooh, you daredevil, Evel Knievel's got nothing on you. But that was sort of something that was like, well, it is something that I am running, and it is kind of something that I am kind of very much like taking on myself and sort of, you know, like.
And being the point person for. Yeah.
Exactly. Whereas I feel that, like, especially since, like, 2016, when I've, like, started to keep slightly more, more kind of, like, mindful borders between these things. But, like, sometimes, like, clients or, like, people that I'm doing work with, like, email me back for about something at, like, 10:18 p.m. And I'm just kind of like, I'm not going to see this until tomorrow morning. Like, I am giving myself license to 100% not care about this until tomorrow.
That was definitely an evolution in my life in the last 18 months.
Yeah, I think it's something that everybody has to learn, because your first thought is like, oh gosh, I want to be available and responsive and solve a problem for you. I would like to be helpful. And you just sort of have to turn off that part of your brain that wants to please, and turn on the part of your brain that is like, if I'm going to behave as a professional, it is 100% okay for me to respond to this tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And how much better will that work be when you have a good night's sleep, and, you know, just like, how much more excited will you be to do the thing when you're doing it during, you know, work hours that
right.
you've set for yourself?
Right. And when it is going to be sort of something that you're devoting your attention to, not kind of like half reading it so that you can like scribble off an email and get back to like whatever you were doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that this is the, like, in some ways, tricep to the bicep of burnout. This idea of time off. But I really like the thread that you introduced, Sarah, of time off of one thing is time on another, and just sort of thinking about it maybe more positivistically as like, what is it, what parts of yourself need nurturing after like X amount, you know, like 90% of your time is spent on just like creating work.
Yeah. Who, I guess that is the question. I think that there's like, I definitely have felt this in myself last year and this year. And I don't know if taking some time away has reset this or not. We'll see. But just sort of feeling very like sharp and cynical. A little bit coming at all of the things I need to do from just like a place of task accomplishment, and not, you know, sort of really thinking through projects, you know, how can I deliver the best version of this? What can I learn from this process? Just I've had more of like a get or done mentality for a while. And so, you know, I think at least for me, that resets when I go somewhere either new or somewhere where I haven't been in a while and I'm just in a different environment where I just cannot think that way. And I think taking time for yourself or going somewhere new, whatever works. Yeah, it's a little bit of a reset of your ability to like wonder and be curious and have, you know, just sort of unbridled enthusiasm. You know, there's all this sort of shade and self-consciousness about being a tourist, but I love it, man. Like, I love reading.
No, being a tourist is great.
It's phenomenal. And you know, you can't be, be a little bit more sophisticated or know it all when the whole point is that you're reading the guidebook and learning the fun facts, you know. I'm curious, for the two of you, whether, because I've been talking about traveling and you guys have been talking more about just sort of taking time away from being available, is, do you see them as similar, different? Do you get different things out of just like turning off your phone for a day versus, you know, taking a camping trip an hour north of the city or whatever? How do you think about like time off versus vacations?
I mean, they're very different things in my brain. Like, and you know, and part of it is like, I kind of can't remember the last time that I traveled and didn't have to do work while I traveled. Like, last year I went to Europe, and while I was there, I wrote 2 freelance scripts, just because that was kind of how the dates lined up.
Yeah.
But even if, you know, you're not doing that, usually sort of there is an expenditure of energy, an expenditure of kind of like planning and logistics, an expenditure for me definitely of extrovert points and kind of being around people. And I find that I get to my, I need time off from being around people place. I get to that line a lot faster than I get to my, I need time off from work.
Yeah.
Place.
No, 100%.
And so,
as someone who has worked on a bunch of vacations, including this one I just took.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vacations are very fun. Vacations are wonderful. Vacations are rejuvenating. I feel like, in terms of just like actually recharging batteries, I get a lot more out of being around my house and not doing work for 3 days than I do about travel.
Interesting.
Like, travel is great, but travel is exhausting. Like, travel definitely like saps energy away from you, I find, personally.
This is the one way in which I am more extroverted, is like I get energy from travel. I usually don't get energy from being around people, but like being in a new place gives me like a little jolt. I totally hear you, and especially like being around people is always draining.
No, I usually like, you know, like real talk, like I dread the day after you get back from a vacation, like the first day that you're back, because everybody's like, oh, let's get together. I want to hear all about it. I want to hear everything.
Oh my God.
And it's like, just like, I know, like, I don't want to like even
Flickr
get
Flickr account for this.
Like, yeah, God made Instagram for this. Right. Yeah.
Like, I am putting my phone on airplane mode. Like, I don't even want to get text messages today. I'll respond to you tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. So I feel like I am like, I find myself between these two, like, sort of extremes of, like, I feel like I default towards, like, just being alone is, like, how I recharge.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But hearing you and just seeing this, like, glimmer in your eye, I'm like, oh, yes, I love the travel. I miss the travel. I need to get out of this fucking basement more. And you know, I think that one of the bigger things that I'm seeing is this idea of like breaking routine.
Oh yeah.
Like I've just had a couple of moments in the last like week or so where I was consciously trying to just say no more and like have better boundaries with myself and work and sleep, just because the last 3 months have been such a roller coaster. And in the process of that, there's just been these like little magic moments where like something happens, or I'll like say, like something comes out of my mouth that I like didn't expect to say, or you know, just I'm just in a different sort of context than I've normally been in.
Sure.
From like walking Kathleen, my girlfriend's new puppy, and like that feeling something like a vacation, because like people talk to you differently when you have a dog, and like you go to new place, like, you know, you literally like see new parts of Central Park because you have this little thing that has a mind of its own that wants to go over there, goddamn it.
Right.
Like, you want to indulge it because it's cute as hell. Like little moments like that to like, you know, just like, I just feel like, one, I'm hearing that I actually might like to travel, as somebody who's like been sort of like, I don't really care for travel, because like I had a couple years of a fair amount of travel, but it was all work travel. So,
you
know, yeah, no, that'll.
And then like the idea just like financially of taking a vacation has felt very stressful.
Unfeasible.
This was a very stupid idea financially. I want to be clear about that.
And so that's one of those things, like,
let it not go unsaid.
Like, but I'm hearing the value in it, and like, you know, so like on the other hand, there's like the, like, you can't, like, I've been feeling this way about therapy for the last like year of like, like, I don't know if I can afford it, but I really can't afford not to.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that that's definitely emerged for me as a theme around taking time off. And I think for practical reasons, it is meant like taking time alone, taking time like with, like I've like been trying to get more into making music and like mm-hmm. wanting to like spend more time laughing and like learning about like comedy stuff. And so like, yeah, it's been like more staycation-y. But I'm now feeling this breath of fresh air and this idea of taking,
I don't know, man. I think it's whatever works for you. Like, one, I think you can probably design a trip that's meaningful to you, and it won't look like the one that I took.
Right.
It'll look different. And it may look exactly like a staycation. And that's 100% fine. You know, I'm someone who's always loved to travel and like always wants to be away. And that's also fine. But it's just, I think finding those sort of, as you said earlier, it's things that put you in a different mindset and sort of break routine for you and allow you to sort of experience the world in a different way. That's necessary every now and again. Future.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at patreon.com/nobadideas. And if you love the show, please leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks. See you next week.